I'm Matthew McCabe. Welcome to Miracle Voices. Each episode, we will be delving into stories of forgiveness, healing, and transformation that have come about from integrating the principles of the book, A Course in Miracles. If you want to learn more about A Course in Miracles, visit www.acim.org. If you'd like to visit the Miracle Voices site, please go to www.miraclevoices.org. If you feel inspired to make a love offering, please visit us at miraclevoices.org/donate. All donations go to support the work of the Foundation for Inner Peace, the publisher of A Course in Miracles. Now here's your program. Welcome to Miracle Voices. I'm your co-host, Matthew McCabe, and I'm here with my co-host, Tam Morgan. Tam, Happy New Year. How are you doing?
Thank you. Sorting through, I think, like everyone else in these times, but doing well.
I think I'm going to change that to my Facebook status, just sorting through. Gail, yeah. Our guest today is Gail Wisner. Gail, welcome to Miracle Voices.
Thank you so much, Matt. I'm super excited to be here.
Gail, where are you sitting in the world right now?
I am in West Palm Beach, Florida.
West Palm Beach, nice. A good place to be in the wintertime. And how about you, Tam?
I am in Mill Valley, California.
That's another nice place. And I'm on the south coast of Portugal. Gail, can you tell us how A Course in Miracles came into your life?
Sure. Through Marianne Williamson. I lived in New York City at the time. And I'm not sure exactly how Marianne Williamson popped into my inbox, but probably because I was already connected with many of the people that she had been that she is connected with. I was on a healing journey for many, many, many years and pretty much tried everything. And then one day Marianne popped into my inbox and, you know, introduced something called A Course in Miracles. And I listened to a podcast and I immediately gravitated towards it. Like I just felt this instant connection and wanted to learn more. And so I started to listen to her podcast for like a year. And then eventually I found out she's, you know, doing it live at the church. And so I was able to attend some of those and meet her in person and ask questions. So basically she is the one that introduced me to the course.
Well, that's great. A lot of people have come in by way of Marianne, I think. So that's a wonderful story. I didn't realize she had a church. Where's the church?
It was in, I think, Tribeca or downtown Manhattan, New York City.
Okay. Very cool.
Yeah, she had a gathering place. In LA, she also had a place where she met regularly.
And Gail, did you feel like as you deepened in your understanding of A Course in Miracles, your life began to change or your outlook began to change?
Everything began to change. It wasn't obviously didn't happen in a day. It wasn't overnight, but slowly my whole world changed. My whole thinking changed. I remember there were many, many times where I sat literally frozen because I started to realize that my entire foundation, everything that I had been raised with was crumbling down right under me. You know, my foundation was literally crumbling and everything was, you know, I mean, at that point I was like, it's all a lie. And I don't know if I want to use the word a lie right now, but it just wasn't, you know, it wasn't really the truth, you know, of what's real. And because of the way I was raised, which is how most of us was raised, I personally lived in a state of chronic anger and terror. It was like a ping pong ball. I vacillated between anger and terror. And those were pretty much my two states. And I didn't even know what the word peace felt like. But when I heard, you know, about it in the course, I just was like, this is what I want. This is what I want. I want peace more than I want anything else. And I'm willing to do whatever it takes. And so that was it. There is no question that I am a completely different human being because of A Course in Miracles.
I have a question. in this, were you fully immersed in the course? Were you reading the text alone? Were you practicing the workbook? How in your beginning journeys with the course did you navigate through?
Oh, thank you. That's a great question. So initially, it was literally just listening to her lectures. It was nothing else. It was just listening and listening and listening and listening, probably for like a year before I even got A Course in Miracles and actually bought it. And so from listening, just from listening to Marianne for a year, I already started to feel major, major, major shifts. But then she would always advocate in her lectures, you can't just listen to me. You got to actually read the course and do, you know, and actually do the exercises. You know, she was really humble that way. Like, you know, I'm not the course. I'm just, you know, sharing it and I guess introducing it and making it a little bit more understandable because it is a bit, you know, esoteric and stuff. And so after a year and already feeling a lot, I said, okay, I'm going to actually do this for real. And I got the course. And I mean, by now I've read through it 3 times cover to cover, but yes, I did the exercises every single day religiously, because I wanted my life to change that much. So there is no question that once you actually do the exercises and read, you know, the rest of the book in little chunks, for me, it had to be little chunks because it's a lot to digest. Yeah. There was absolutely a deepening that resulted from really doing it correctly. And it went from like a superficial forgiveness, you know, for the people that I needed to forgive, to what is today an absolute full 100% forgiveness. So it took many years and a lot of work, but it's like anything in life, you know, you get out of it what you put into it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Did you have a hard time, Gail, at all with the idea that the course says, you know, what we think happened actually didn't happen? Because I know for me and a lot of other people, there's that unconscious resistance, like, what do you mean that did happen? And I should feel bad about it. And they should too.
Yeah. So great question. Initially, yes, absolutely. I was like, are they denying my experience? This is what I experienced. You know, my father was an alcoholic and he was physically, emotionally, sexually abusive. And I am not making this stuff up. And so initially there was disbelief and even a little bit of anger. And what I came to understand today, and this is my understanding, you know, because I think we all understand the course through our own lens and, you know, we're all a little bit different, but the way I understand it and what has given me peace is that I have learned, and this is partly through other programs too. I'm also a member of some other 12-step groups and stuff, and I've done a lot of inner child work. So I kind of combine all of them. And so the way I understand it is I tell the child inside of me that you experienced everything as real. So I validate her experience. And I said, yes, you did watch him hit your brother and do X, Y, and Z. So you are absolutely correct in that, in, you know, through your vantage point, everything did happen exactly as you said it happened. And you're not making it up and you're not embellishing. But so I kind of validate the child. So from that perspective, it did happen. But from the grander scheme, in terms of what's real, and when I say what's real in terms of the effect that it has on me, it's not real. It never happened, because the moment I choose to fully forgive my father, the effect of everything he ever did to me gets completely dismantled and it has no hold over me. And that, I think, is really the essence of it, is that it never happened, meaning it doesn't need to affect you anymore.
That's beautiful. Well, that's beautiful. It brings up one of my favorite sayings of perception is a mirror, not a fact. So what we see gets projected out, but still, and if you start with that it isn't real, like immediately, without acknowledging that part of the ego, you're going to have a big fight. And once you can step into that and embrace that, that indeed is the path to forgiveness and freedom. So
Gail, with the abuse with your father, was it one of those things where it's like, how do you eat an elephant? Like one, that's kind of a weird saying, one tablespoon at a time, but you have this big forgiveness opportunity that probably doesn't feel like an opportunity. It feels like what a challenge or an obstacle. And how do you visit this or tackle it or approach it in a way that, you know, feels manageable where eventually you started to feel that peace?
Yeah. So actually it's pretty simple. It's not easy, but it's very simple because what happens is I deal with it as it comes up real time in my life. So it's not like I sit there and look at everything he ever did to me and say, I'm going to forgive this today. I'm going to forgive this next week. It's, you know, clearly any child who goes through abuse is going to suffer as an adult in many areas of their life, you know, mostly relationships, financial, in terms of addictions that I developed. So as I just every single day, as I notice how my upbringing is affecting my ability to thrive, that is an opportunity for me to forgive that, you know, episode or that component of whatever I experienced as a child. So, you know, if it's an inability to say no to a man, you know, which has, you know, something I struggled with a lot, is, you know, in that time I stop and I re-experience, you know, kind of somatically what happened to me with my father and an inability to say no. And then hold space for that part of me and grieve. Really, I mean, for me, the Course in Miracles, you know, is, I guess, you know, kind of like it's a guide, but even though it's a very intellectual book, it doesn't work, in my opinion, if you stay in the head. You've got to use it as a guide, but you have to actually feel the grief and the emotions that, you know, I personally suppressed as a child because I didn't grow up in a household where emotions were welcomed. So I have to grieve that part of me, the child that didn't feel safe to say no or she'd be abandoned, and let her know that now she's in a safe space. So if any man makes her uncomfortable in any way, she has to tell me, the parent, and I take care of it. And so it entails a lot of grief work and a lot of letting go of the emotions that we accumulate over the years because we're human.
Yeah. Gail, do you ever have a time where you're letting up a lot of this emotion you talk about instead of like pushing it down, you're saying you're letting it up and then it comes up and it passes or you feel some relief, but then it's kind of like the ego regroups and comes back and like tackles or sabotages you. Some people call it like an ego backlash where everything's going along well. And then there's like a sudden surge of that, you know, painful emotion that just comes up for just no apparent reason.
Oh, absolutely. It's never, I don't know if it's ever done. I mean, I think I'm done in certain areas, you know, regarding my upbringing, but it'll come up in other areas. So absolutely. It's a constant lifestyle. And that's why I never stop reading A Course in Miracles. You don't read it and then you're done. You live it. It's something you live every single day. And yes, absolutely. You know, I can, you know, so for, let's just use the example I gave before, saying no to men, I can process it. I can grieve. I can cry for 2 hours straight. And then, you know, get my balance back. And then, you know, the adult does say no to a man that doesn't feel, you know, right or appropriate to me. But then 3 weeks later, I'll meet another guy and it may not be as extreme as the first one because I've already done that work. So now it's going to be more subtle. And that's what's happened to me. You know, it would go from extremes to much more subtle. And then I realized, oh, I'm not done. There's still some work left around it. You know, this may not be, you know, outright abusive, or, but it just somehow doesn't feel right. And so, yes, you do it again and again. It's like the gym. You can't go once and you're done. It is definitely a daily exercise for me, because I live in the world and because I'm always challenging myself in many areas of my life to do more and more. The impact of my childhood is going to come up, if not daily, then pretty close to that. So it's more about just having tools and techniques that you implement to be able to deal when you're off center, you know. And for me, you know, the Course in Miracles teaches me that the ideal is, I don't think any of us are there, I'm certainly not, but the ideal is to be in a state of love and peace all the time. So because I've been blessed to experience what that feels like when I'm not in that state, then I know what I need to do to get myself back to that state. And no, I know it won't be permanent. I wish it was, but it won't be. And then I'll just keep doing it again. And the good news is that I'm able to notice it faster and faster when I'm not feeling amazing, because that's how we're supposed to feel. I notice it faster, and it takes a lot less work to get myself back to where I need to go.
That's exactly, that's exactly the truth of, for me as well, because it's the more we do the practice, also often in the beginning, particularly the more we do the practice, the more the challenging things do come up, because they fight for their right to exist. And I like how you've managed that by acknowledging it, caring for it, and continuing to do the practice when it's so hard. And it's like the gym indeed, in building these muscles of understanding, and reminding that it's your choice which one you want to feel, peace or not peace, love or fear. And in that, I've experienced, and I don't know if you have as well, in the strong practice of it, that there comes a tipping point where the challenges don't come up quite so much, because you're getting more and more and more grounded in that choice. And so you don't really have the time of day anymore or interest in those dramas that come up, even if they come by you and come up to you. It's like, nope, I'm actually bored with that one. And so there is a funny tipping point that I've started to experience. And I don't know if you have in that as well. It sounds like your commitment is so strong in this, and really impressive how disciplined you've been. Have you found or noticed that tipping point?
Definitely, definitely. I never kind of called it that, so I appreciate that terminology. There was a point where I couldn't function, you know, without having some kind of falling apart, you know, every day, like every day it would just fall apart. So yeah, those days are long gone. I can go for a week and still function. So like I alluded to earlier, for me, it's very subtle stuff. So yes, the big drama. And it's funny, I actually just got back from New York. I was there for a week. My niece got married. And so I was around the entire family for a week straight. My dad's still an alcoholic. He's still drinking. He has not changed one bit. And it is such a different experience for me to be there. I literally come as an observer. I am an observer. He does not affect me in any way, shape, or form. I'm kind to him. I don't have an intimate relationship with him because he's not capable of one, but I'm kind to him. And I keep my distance, because that's what I learned. Forgiveness doesn't mean that I'm lovey-dovey with him, you know, and that I hang out with him. Forgiveness means I'm no longer carrying anger and resentment in my heart towards him, but I also take care of myself and don't put myself in that situation with drama. So yes, I went because it's my niece and I love her, but I also knew that I was going to be around a lot of people that for me are just unhealthy. I don't like to necessarily use the word toxic. I don't want to go into judgment, but for me, it's not healthy for me to be around certain people. And so I, you know, how to take care of myself in those situations. So yes, I like you don't have, you know, daily stuff that I have to battle, but because I choose to challenge myself on a subtle level, there's an inner battle every single day that I have to face. And most people wouldn't even call it that. They wouldn't even notice, but because I'm very in tune and self-aware, I can still notice when I'm judging somebody, you know, when fear comes up. I mean, it will, it does. So it never went away, but yeah, it's definitely just on a much smaller, more manageable scale.
Got it.
Yeah. Just sounds like you're being aware of what's going on, you know, in the mental thought process, like, oh, I'm in resentment right now. And this is coming up. It's like, you know, before the course, I wasn't even aware that was happening. It was just, you're this first person experiencing it and not aware that it's going on. It's a marked shift when that happens. Did you have any people in your life that started to mention anything about your behavior? Are you seeming different once you started practicing forgiveness, Gail?
I don't know if my mom definitely commented. My mom has made comments. I think what I did notice a lot is that people started to treat me very different. That is something that I did notice. I don't recall so much about comments, but I have. I mean, the truth is I have gotten some, but what I noticed for me was, wow, people who used to berate me and put me down in my family. I had family members who would be very judgmental of me because I'm the only one in my family who chose to do healing work. And the rest of them have found other ways, but they're not on a healing journey. And, you know, God bless them. That's just where they're at. But they've started to treat me differently. All of a sudden, I'm not being mocked and put down, and nobody's being rude to me anymore. And I think people just sense an internal strength that I developed through A Course in Miracles. And the attitude basically was like, I'm not going to mess with her anymore. You know, I'm going to leave her alone. And again, it's not because they changed. They have not done any work on themselves. They're exactly who they are. They still berate and judge other people. And I hear it. So it's not that they shifted, but all of a sudden it's like, as I started to respect other people, regardless of anything they ever did in the past, right? Because the Course in Miracles is, it's about this moment. What is happening right now in this moment? So in this moment, when I'm around my father, he's not abusing me anymore. He's abusing himself, you know, with addiction, but he's not abusing me anymore. So I treat him with absolute respect, the same I would treat, you know, a client of mine. And so all of a sudden people start treating me with respect. So I'm not getting that same, you know, levels of, you know, mistreatment and abuse that I would get for years from my family. So that is one of the most notable shifts that I've seen.
It's amazing how it's whenever we've done dozens of these podcasts now, and it's always, you know, the relationships that are the forgiveness. That's they're the Everest for everybody, is some relationship or an aspect of a relationship. And then, you know, as we start to heal, we see the relationships getting better. They're that mirror that Tam was talking about. So it's amazing how universal that is.
I just wanted to step in, and this may be challenging to hear. So it might be a forgiveness opportunity that I'm even bringing it up. But I had a father who was exceptionally abusive, a very angry man, New York City lawyer who just loved to sue absolutely everything. I used to say, you know, he wouldn't believe in something unless he could sue it with his own eyes. And towards the end of his life, he lived till 94. I was helping care give him, and he was wildly abusive. And I kept doing my practice, and I kept showing up, and I kept doing my practice. And it came up when you said he's incapable of intimacy, your father, and all of that. my father in the last 6 months of his life changed. He woke up and he said, I had this amazing dream last night about his ex-wife, who was my stepmother, beloved, wonderful woman. And he said, and she, I got to see it in a dream that was all night long, how she and her mother, who my father didn't care for, his mother-in-law, were all about love. And that's what this is. And I have to tell you, Gail, I was angry because he slipped in under the wire after being such an angry man all of his life. He suddenly shifted and was like, no way you're getting my complete forgiveness. You're supposed to leave. And I'm the one who just is accepting you as you are. And it was so shocking and it was so startling that he did turn into love. And I never thought it possible. So when we say someone's incapable of something, even that is something that can bounce back on us. Just so you know, I lived it. And I'm still dealing with the repercussions of him becoming all love at the end.
Thank you for sharing that. And sure. You know, and that is true that, you know, never say never. And it's always about where he's at right now. And there's no question he shifted a lot in that he stopped being abusive to me. I mean, he used to ridicule me and, you know, put me down and, you know, especially I'm never good enough. I mean, I would get comments left and right. So he's already shifted tremendously. But you're giving me a lot of hope and it is a good reminder to never, you know, put somebody in some box and conclude that they're never going to get out of there, because I wouldn't have appreciated if somebody did that to me, you know, 20 years ago when I was a wreck.
Yeah. And there's the miracle. I never hoped for it. In fact, I think in retrospect, I hoped he didn't, so that, you know, like, as I say, that man made it under the wire. Everyone was shocked at the end. So, yeah. So the moment we do that, we're also continuing that little tiny piece is holding on to a story where really everyone is opportunity for us to forgive, however we're seeing them. If it's, you know, in the littlest ways that we're sure they're going to be that way. But change can happen. It does happen. And it doesn't have to happen on the outside. And that's what you're living and breathing. It really does. And it's wonderful that the attitudes on the outside are shifting. But what really is reflecting is the work that you're doing inside. And, you know, it really sounds quite extraordinary. And you know, I bow to you in that, in the discipline of how you're doing it.
Thank you. It really is so freeing to know that we create our own life experience. And it's just such a blessing to live in that space, so that when, you know, my ego creeps up and gives me a reason to be, you know, afraid or angry at another person and feel like they're destroying my peace, you know, it can happen for 60 seconds or even more, you know, if it's a big thing going on. But I immediately go back to that inner knowing that I do create my own experience. And yes, people do things that aren't nice and they say things that aren't nice. That is true. And again, it's that balance between it's not real, but it is real. So it's real that people do things that are out of alignment with who they really are. But it's not real in the sense of it doesn't have to impact me at all.
Absolutely. And my mother, who is the co-founder of Foundation for Inner Peace and helped bring the course to everyone here, one of her favorite sayings was, don't mix levels. So, you know, this we are in this level of existence to work through it. But I did want to say that the only, like, there is always a shift in perception as well when we think that someone else can or cannot be doing something. And whatever they do, it's our practice continuously to hold on to the choice of peace within it. They can change, they cannot change, but as you see, your choice for you is the important one in it.
Gail, do you have anything practical you do when you just get caught in that ego storm that we can leave listeners with? I mean, do you go for a run? Do you call a friend? Or is there anything you do where you just feel like, man, this always helps me when I'm just totally caught in an ego storm?
Yeah. So I used to do those two things. I used to, I'm very into health and fitness anyway. So I train every day, but I used to go for a run or call a friend. And now I actually do the opposite because for example, I can go for a run and it'll let off steam. That's for sure. But it won't really change what needs to be changed on the inside. And, so what I do is I stop. Sometimes I'm literally in the middle of something, you know, I work full time, so I'm not always able to do that in the moment. But as soon as I reasonably can, I stop and I get really, really, really quiet. And I go inside and I really work through what is happening. And it's, for me, it looks like an inner dialogue. That's really what it is. It's an inner dialogue between the part of me that's, angry or scared or, you know, having an emotion that doesn't feel good. So it's giving voice to that part of me and allowing it to express itself in, you know, a healthy, non-harmful way. And then, I forgot. I do pray before. I do pray that the Holy Spirit guide me and help me work this through. So I know that there's something greater that's happening. And so I then have, you know, my higher self, you know, through the Holy Spirit, basically have a dialogue with that part of me because we all have parts, right? And the ego is never going away. I know that for the rest of my life. In this human incarnation, my ego will be here. So that part of, so I just have that dialogue and my higher self kind of, helps me remember, you know, what is happening. And also like for me, what helps a lot is that I know that everything is energy, right? The Course talks about that all the time. There's no such thing as form. Form is not real. So I remind myself that, you know, whoever it is that's, you know, supposedly doing something or saying something that's feeling hurtful to me, you know, that's just an energy. And it's my choice whether I allow that energy in or not. But that person has no power over me. And also the thing that helps me a lot is, you know, that everybody's a mirror, right? Like everyone's a mirror to me. So that energy lives inside of me. So that person can't do anything. All they've done is awakened that energy in me. And then I get to choose how I use that energy and to transform it. So basically, to answer your question in a short form, I stop, I pause, and I really go inward and resolve what needs to be resolved. And sometimes it's 2 minutes because it's not a big deal. And sometimes it can be an hour if it's something big going on in my life.
That's fantastic. I think the elevator pitch to that I just heard the other day that made me smile called Stop, Drop, Ask, and Listen. It sums it up at you do it over and over and over again, and there's always an answer in there.
Yes, the Holy Spirit has never left me hanging, ever, ever, ever. There has never been a time that I have prayed for real guidance and real help on how to navigate something off sometimes very difficult situations because I come from very strong personalities. And, you know, the Holy Spirit always tells me exactly what to say, when to respond, when to keep my mouth shut. You know, he does guide us. You know, we just have to get really, really quiet because, you know, the ego speaks first and the ego speaks loudest, but the Holy Spirit whispers. And so our job is to be quiet so we can hear that still small voice inside and then pray for the courage to actually follow it.
That's it. That's it.
Yeah, that's so true. It's more like a blaring megaphone of like Gilbert Gottfried, the ego talks so loud. It's almost unhearable sometimes. I have to wait, just like you're talking about. It's like, wow, it's unbelievable how quick, and there's an emotional connection too to that ego response where the emotions are involved. It's can be hard to see, much less surmount sometimes. So I'm glad you said that, Gail. Gail, you mentioned Marianne Williamson is kind of a bridge that got you to A Course in Miracles. Is there any other books that you consider kind of really helpful for you on your spiritual journey that you'd like to share?
Urantia. Definitely. I'm a reader of Urantia. That has helped me a lot.
Can you summarize what that is for people that aren't familiar?
I mean, mostly the part that I focus on is the life of Jesus and how he lived and who he, just how he lived his life. And there's just so much wisdom in that book. And it's a guide, you know, which is different than A Course in Miracles. For me, Urantia, because there's so much, Urantia is a huge book. I mean, it's like over 1,000 pages. So for me, Urantia is a guide on how to live. You know, with a human example of how, you know, it just goes through the life of Jesus and how he lived his life and who he was as a human being, and, you know, when he was, you know, here as a human. And, you know, there's a lot of other stuff I don't really, you know, get into. It's all about, you know, this world and what's going to happen in the next world and all of that. So there's so much to it. But because the course is such a big part of my life and there's only so much time I have in a day, the part of Urantia that really speaks to me is just the life of Jesus. And I kind of try to read a little bit of that every day, just usually even a few lines. And it's just a reminder to me of how I want to live. And it's, you know, completely antithetical to the father that I had. So it's like literally, you know, the two opposite extremes. You know, I grew up with a father who modeled everything I don't ever want to do. And then I have Jesus who models, you know, how I want to live and show up in the world. So that definitely helps. I'm also, you know, in 12-step recovery for many, many years. So I definitely learn a lot from the 12 steps and, you know, the 12 and 12 book. And, you know, I'm looking at my bookshelf and I've got several hundred books. So I would, you know, I've read so many of them, but, you know, I learn from everybody. You know, I've done Tony Robbins stuff and I learn a lot from him. So, you know, in a different way. So what I will say to this is to listeners, and I really believe this, that God just sends us kind of the books and the people that we're going to resonate most with to help guide us. So when you hear of a book, you know, if it doesn't feel like something, you know, particularly interesting, then let it go. It's not for you. But if it feels like, oh, I'm curious about this, I want to learn more about this book or this person, then just trust that intuition, because not everybody needs the same teachers or the same tools to get them where they need to go.
Yeah, that's very beautiful. And I just, you know, I don't even know if this is appropriate within the podcast, but I'm going to say it anyway, because what I know about Urantia, and I have looked through it, but one of my favorite stories is the publisher of Urantia was a very close friend of my mother, who's the publisher of A Course in Miracles. And he called her one day and he said, you know, I can't believe the word and the messaging and the marketing of A Course in Miracles that's gotten out the way that it is as a business. What is your business model and what is your business plan? Can you share it with me? And my mother said, absolutely. And he said, oh, good. I'd love to hear what it is. And she said, we don't have one. Said, what do you mean you don't have one? And she said, well, from the beginning, when we asked for one, we were told you will be told what to do, when and where it is time to do what to do. Stay in the present. If you knew what is going to happen to all of this, you would be basically the equivalent of paralyzed and not do anything. So all you need to know is to stay in the present. He said, so you've never had a business plan, you know, 35 years into it. And she said, no. and I just always found that so funny in both of their models, and they both laughed and really took it to heart.
Oh, that's great. And hilarious too.
Yeah, it was very funny.
Probably waiting for some elaborate business plan with some secret hook to sell millions.
He was adorable. And it was just that, like, what is the secret you hold? And do you mind sharing it? Nope, don't mind at all.
Yeah, love that. The Holy Spirit is my business plan.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And also just in the resonating each time you mention your father, and being at this place where I said, like, at the end, he turned into love, the realization that, like, your father and the exact opposite of him are one and the same, because your father's purpose here was to be exactly who he was in order for your growth to happen this way, and that everything really is perfect. And that is so hard to see when someone is being, I won't use the curse words that come to mind with it, but truly in the perfection of everything, to get to the point of going, like, when my father became that loving, I thought, was this a joke? Was this truly who you've always been? And you've just put on that other thing so I could do all this work to get to this place. And I felt betrayed by his incredibly, you know, his incredible transformation. And I realized, it brought me to another place of work and forgiveness, because he wasn't opposite than anything. He was playing, it felt like he was playing a role, although not consciously, to, you know, his path. He had finished his path and he could be loving again, like we're all dreaming this. And at the end, we all, you know, take off our roles of the dream actors and go, good job. That was a really horrible performance. you did so well at that horrible performance, and back to love.
Yeah, Tim, most people don't realize that Bill and Helen, what complementary ego dynamics was the term I think the Holy Spirit used for those two, but you saw them together and they weren't, like, they had rough edges when they were not working on the course. Can you talk about that a little bit? Because it kind of proves your point, what you're just making.
They had rough edges when they were working on the course. They had a lot of ego dynamics between them. And Helen tended to put Bill down a lot. Backstory, she was in love with him and very upset and very angry that he didn't return the love in that way. And so there were some punishing that would go on. And even in her bringing Ken, that just triangulated the situation. So then their focus on the course and the dedication to the course really did indeed bring them together into this work. But Helen was not a devoted course practitioner. And in fact, one of the things she did say to my mother on her deathbed was, you know why I'm leaving, don't you? And my mother said, why? And she said, to get out of its way, meaning the course. So she had done her job. Bill, however, continued, stayed, practiced the course. And literally the day that he died, that morning, he said, I've done it. I've forgiven. There's no one in my life I have issue with. And he was dancing and twirling around my mother's living room, saying that before it was 4th of July, before he walked out and dropped dead. So, they both were in service to the course and they both did exactly what they were supposed to do and appeared. I mean, Helen was not an easy person. So they appeared as these two different parts of even the course itself.
So glad you brought that up. Cause I mean,
you brought it up.
Yeah, you call it in the details because I never want to sound like, you know, we're walking around in princely robes or like monks' right. outfits. We all got these rough edges, and it's part of the deal. But complementary ego dynamics, you know, it helps get the everything up, all the junk from the unconscious mind.
Indeed.
Well, Gail, it's been a pleasure having you on the podcast, and thank you so much for your miracle voice. Is there any way people can follow and connect with you?
Sure. The best way is, my website's Gail, GAILWISNER.com, or you can email me at Gail, GAIL.WISNER, WISNER at compass.com, COMPASS.com. That's probably the best way to reach me. And thank you for this incredible opportunity. It's been a real gift to be able to share something that has truly transformed me and made life worth living again.
I know we're at the end of this, but I am still going to ask this question. Was there any specific forgiveness story that you had wanted to share that we got so into, you know, practice and theory? Was there anything that we didn't give you the opportunity to share?
No, thank you. I mean, the biggest one was definitely my father and my mother, because my mother didn't abuse me, but she stood silent and didn't do anything when we were all being abused, and she didn't, you know, she just didn't do anything. Yeah. And so there was a lot of anger at her for the neglect. And she chose to protect herself and not put herself in harm's way and gave her children instead. And so there was definitely a lot of having to forgive her. And it manifested by me neglecting myself and my own needs. My whole life I was neglecting myself. And then I kind of discovered where it was coming from, you know, where I learned it, not that she's the source, but where I learned it from. And so there's been tremendous forgiveness there. And the forgiveness happened by me actually showing up for myself and taking care of my needs. And a lot of it came from really understanding where it came from. Her mother was a Holocaust survivor and was an orphan, and nobody ever took care of her mother, and she had to fend for herself. And so she didn't really pass on, you know, how to be a mother to my mother. So, you know, a lot of it was just a real understanding. And so now I have nothing but love and compassion for my mother and understand her limitations. And so, you know, I just saw her and I hug her, and it, you know, it's just, it's fine now. Is she's still unable to be a mother to me, but that's okay, because I can be a mother to me. And then again, of course, with my father, I couldn't be in the same room with him. That's how angry I was with him. And now I can sit next to him, and he's just a human being who struggles just like everybody else. And, you know, and he's on his own journey, and it is none of my business, and it has nothing to do with me. And so I'm at peace. I'm at peace with what happened. I, like you shared, know that everything I experienced, I had to experience in order to get me to where I am today. And I would never have the relationship I have today with myself, with the Holy Spirit, with, you know, with other human beings, if I didn't go through what I went through. I still have compassion for the part of me that went through it. You know, it was definitely difficult, and, you know, and I hold space for that. And that allows me to be patient with myself when I have hard moments. So thanks for that.
Oh, absolutely. And also one of the things that I found in this level of form is when we do this healing work, time shifts, and it's like, what manifests, it seems to, is that the healing happens generationally. So backwards and forwards. It's like you're healing that part of your grandmother who didn't know how to be a mother, to your mother, to you, to any children that you have. You know, it goes in both directions and all directions, and then out to the world. So I thank you for doing your work. It makes a difference.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you, Gail. Have a great new year.
You as well. You as well.
Thanks so much for listening today. Please subscribe to Miracle Voices by hitting the subscribe button on your podcast app. If you are enjoying these conversations, please consider leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever podcast app you use. And lastly, please visit us at miraclevoices.org and join our newsletter so we can stay connected. Until the next podcast, I want to leave you with my favorite course quote, "When you want only love, you will see nothing else."